Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
This is the second part of a two-part program delving into mindfulness meditation in schools. Today we'll look into the dangers, the promoters of altered mind states and promised religion, and point parents towards some resources they can use to do some research on this new religion being stealthily promoted in schools. My guest today again is Brian Perkins, a small town counselor from Northeast PA who cares about families and the public schools. Thanks, Brian, for being with us again.
I'm excited to be here back with you, Diane. Thank you.
So, last week we talked about, just gave kind of an introductory information about the mindfulness. I don't think parents, I know I did not know anything about this mindfulness attack upon our schools, upon our school kids, again, targets of this attack, which is what it is for sure. So how does one encounter this promised religion? Last program, you used that term promised religion to describe this whole concept. So how does one encounter that?
By way of review, a promised religion, as I'm using it, would be to orient someone toward religion itself, even if it's not a specific religion. That's what I'm calling it. So you were asking about comparisons to addiction. And from what I'm hearing people say, I mean, authoritative people who are studying these topics, a promised religion may be stronger than an addiction in its ability to cause delusion or influence a child's worldview. Those are that's the type of language we're hearing.
Wow. I mean,
there's analytical comments. You may have heard of that. He's an accomplished psychologist, Dr. Jordan Peters, and he has considerable knowledge. He's written books, and he was involved in the drug tests that induced altered mind states in adults using drugs. And he had Timothy Leary's job back at Harvard for a while. Some quotes from him, he said, clearly people have a biologically instantiated religious instinct, meaning instantiated being it's made concrete. So you have a religious instinct. Physiology automatically turns you toward some type of religious conclusion is what he's saying. And he says another quote, if you go deep enough into the psyche, it becomes increasingly difficult to separate what you discover from reality. That's what altered mind states do. Mm-hmm. Another quote, religious experience can be induced by hallucinogens. That's what he is very experienced in. So he has related how a researcher that he knew may have actually been, in his words, scared out of further experimentation because although the content of the religious experiences varied, nearly 100% of the people that the researcher tested reported having some sort of religious experience while in that drug-induced mind state. The researcher wasn't looking to try and establish a religion, but that's what he was coming up with all of his test candidates. For humans, we just consider truth that we discover, that we believe most deeply to be religious truth.
Right,
that's where the
false
religion comes from.
So this is totally messing with people's minds.
Absolutely has the power to do that. It does.
Wow. Do you know if this researcher was dealing with adults or...
Yes.
Has there been a lot of research on how this impacts kids? And there'll probably been research done on adults, but how or has there been any research done on the impact on kids?
I'm not aware of what it is. Everything I hear, I haven't gone looking for it exhaustively, but longitudinal studies of something like what's going on in the public schools, forget it. I don't see how that's possible. The only place they could turn to would be cultures where they've used Buddhism and mindfulness for such a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at their results, there are people looking at their results. And in fact, we should get into that. Let me just start, though, about some of these various ways that have been proven to encounter promised religion. To answer your question, I didn't mean to get off topic there, but
no, that's fine.
They're converging. Our society, our churches are bringing them in, the school children now, but all of the techniques operate in that trance mind state, and some of them require more repetition or a longer exposure to reach the point of the religious belief level. So I'll summarize a few of those just to let you know that the term to keep in mind, I think, is that they are emotionally coercive. They leave a person without a choice. You reach a point where there is no longer a choice, it happens spontaneously, it becomes emotionally coercive. Like if you can think of if you were to slip opiates into our school lunch programs.
Mm.
You know, you'd have good mood control. You'd have better moods for the kids for a while, but I don't think any parent would sign up for that.
Right,
after
true.
Long-term exposure, we know that that's going to cause
right.
problems.
Right, and I'll tell you what. When you first contacted me, I immediately thought of this social-emotional learning. I know I've talked to you about it, but I need to do more research on the social-emotional learning and any, if there may be any connections with this mindfulness thing, if that's one of the techniques that they're using. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
I'm glad you do the kind of work you do, because those type of topics, I was not aware of it either.
Yeah.
The things that go on in the schools, it takes someone full-time. I'm so glad you do the work that you do. I've depended on it for years.
Well, thank you.
It helped me to get my kids.
But we depend on
school.
Folks like you, you know, to let us, you know, to let us know about additional stuff that we've missed, because I had no idea. Wow.
Well, now that we have the internet, if you know where to look, you can find some things. But
right.
it's muddy water. It really is. So I'll give some examples. A few of the ways, anyway, to reach this trance-based mind
okay.
state. I tell you, you're seeing things on the internet now, like 10 ways to hack into the altered mind state or into the alpha wave state.
Oh,
you know, Americans being Americans, they're trying to find shortcuts now so that they
right.
don't have to spend so much time learning how to meditate, so many hours in meditation. But the first one I would hold up is called brainwave entrainment. The two types you hear about are binaural beats or monaural beats. Binaural being A-U-R-A-L, like it's done through your hearing, through sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're wearing earbuds, it would be binaural. If you're not wearing earbuds, it would be monaural.
Okay.
And there's various people, they call themselves, you know, Buddhist activists. It's in their, I've seen it in their resumes. They're promoting these in the different apps. What that does, it was discovered, I don't know, I think in the 1800s, where if you play these discordant sounds in your ears, certain discordant sounds, it will induce the alpha mind state in your brain. And so this is being incorporated in relaxation apps and meditation apps on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, I don't know how many, hundreds probably of these different apps that are available out there. I would never, some of the websites I've seen will give warnings saying, well, this should not be used on children. It should not be used on people that are prone to seizures.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them just put the app out there and do with what you
and,
want. With
right.
No warnings.
So, but some do actually give warnings about the use of that app.
About the use of brainwave entrainment
right.
and binaural beats, because it does induce seizures in people. I've known people that it happened to who now have to take seizure medicine because they were listening to relaxation apps while they slept to help them sleep better.
Oh my goodness.
It induces the alpha mind state involuntarily.
Right.
And if you have some kind of mystical sounding music in the background of a relaxation app, and you don't know if they're incorporating these off-chord sounds
right.
or not. That's a good example of unwarranted appeal. It's a matter of informed consent, in my mind, that's not regulated. If what was it called years ago when they had those TV commercials where they would have just
the
a
subliminal
very brief...
messages?
Yes,
yeah.
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They show popcorn or a milkshake or something,
right.
but they'd show it so quickly that your mind, you didn't realize it. It just creates the power of suggestion.
Yeah.
Things like that are regulated, but brainwave entrainment, that's not, to my knowledge, regulated. And all these apps could conceivably contain that. They could be using it in our schools, for all I know.
And it's a whole new concept, so I doubt if there's any type of regulation. That's how they're getting away with all this.
And the complication of it.
Yeah.
And then if you take drugs, for example, that would be the second way that I would, example that I'd hold up. They're using MDMA, that's methamphetamine. They're using ketamine, that's a cat anesthetic. It's called Special K on the street.
Mm.
They're using psilocybin, you know, magic mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Doing experiments, and these are high-level experiments. There's an outfit called MAPS. It's the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies.
Wow.
It's a for-profit organization that's working with top-level psychologists, and they're in, I think, the third level of approval through the FDA to get psilocybin approved as an augmentation to psychotherapy. So I get advertisements coming in from Harvard Medical School from time to time that say pay them and participate in their training to learn how to incorporate these psychedelic drugs into psychotherapy.
How have we gotten here as a nation? I mean, it used to be psychedelic drugs. I associate those immediately with hippies of the 60s. Needless to say, they were not highly viewed, the hippie lifestyle. So how did we as a nation get to where we are, to where they're wanting to incorporate this into psychotherapy?
It's I suppose there are a lot of reasons for that. Back in the 60s, way back before that time, psychedelic drugs were called psycholytic, L-Y-T-I-C, which meant soul-dissolving. And then they changed it to a more, you know, a more trendy name.
Yeah.
And got all the college students back in those days. I'm a little young. I'm sure you're too young to remember all that. But
yep.
They were Tune In, Turn On, Drop Out, Timothy Leary, all them. They said that, hey, this is a great thing to do. It's good for you in certain ways. It has benefits. And then they found out that there was a lot of troubling side effects that it was that they were causing. We didn't learn from that history. We've renamed things again. Now, instead of altered mind states, psychology is calling them non-ordinary mind states.
Non-ordinary.
Which sounds,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that's the new official term, non-ordinary mind states, as if we're not talking about transcendent mind states. That's what it is. We're transcending our consciousness. And and it's the same thing that's been happening for centuries with Buddhists and Hindus and the Eastern religions.
Right.
And so now here we are, trying to find shortcuts and using low doses of these street drugs to induce the alpha mind state or to make a person, this gets more technical, to make a person fall into that lower level altered mind state that doesn't involve as many alpha waves, where a portion of their thoughts are still intact, where you can do memory healing and different things. We're talking about some very, very influential, world-famous psychologists that are involved in these studies. And they're coming to their conclusions very empirically.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes a point where wisdom has to take over. So, and that I think we've just
and common
gone
sense. Common sense is dead.
It's common sense if you remember history.
Well, that's
when
true.
Everybody changes the language, they change the language, and then they only tell you about the positive benefits. Then we need people like you to keep us all well informed as far as what's not being told.
Yeah, in the information you sent me, you said that Eastern Hindu-style yoga is now used by some schools instead of detention.
Yes, yeah. I saw a photograph of the kids doing that down in the Philadelphia area.
Wow.
That's a good segue. And the next example I'd hold up is extreme movement for how to induce an alpha mind state. We talked about the fast movement, like spinning like a whirling dervish, where that'd be a Muslim-type mystic. We'd get a blousy robe and a certain type of hat, and they spin and spin and spin until the disorientation apparently takes them up into the alpha mind state for religious reasons.
Wow.
Or that's how yoga is the ultra-slow movement, where you pinch your vagal nerve, certain yoga moves, and you send what's called afferent signals. Afferent signals, those establish a neural pathway into your brain. Now, we're getting, like I said, it gets very technical, but you can look that up on Wikipedia. About the vagal nerve and afferent signals, I believe that's easily available online if you know what you're looking for and if you're willing to engage that sort of technical language.
Right.
But yoga moves like Eastern Hindu-style yoga are being used in schools instead of detention. And it's not just like you'll see at the gymnasium like, well, we've just done step aerobics. Let's do a couple of down dog positions to stretch out our hamstrings. It's not like, boom, now you're a Hindu. It doesn't work that way. As I understand it, you get into these extreme positions and you extend them for long periods and these afferent signals, you're basically installing wiring to enable your brain to get into the alpha mind state. Then the Hindus would incorporate sounds and a lot of other methods into the yoga in order to complete their religious procedures and what they do.
Yeah.
But if you want someone to scoff at you, tell them you think yoga is dangerous, and it's just so mainstream now.
I know, because now there's quote-unquote Christian yoga. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a big misnomer.
Yeah, absolutely. So mindfulness is more into the controlled breathing? Is that in the visualization or focused awareness? Is that more the mindfulness techniques?
Yes, that's more of their core program is controlled breathing, because there, again, it's easy to do. The teacher can guide a person to control their breathing, and that's more powerful than you would think. Those focused awareness techniques are exactly what New Age practitioners use and the transcendental meditation people use, and different mind pictures, but controlled breathing is a big one. Some churches are now, they're promoting that New Age contemplative, they're calling it prayer in their language. It's a New Age type of contemplation, and it's called spiritual formation, and it's marketed by numerous people. The most famous one is a man named Richard Foster. There's an organization called Renovari, and there's others too. But they've got that sweeping through a lot of the evangelical churches now, and they've got them convinced that it's a way to contact Jesus. by getting into the alpha mind state, and that religious experience you have up there, they claim that that's a Christian experience.
It's
so
amazing.
The New Agers have it. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's amazing. Jesus never said we had to do that.
No, it's not in the Bible.
No,
in fact,
not at all. And unfortunately, too many churches are drifting away from the Bible and not taking it as God's word, unfortunately. What are the specific names of some of the programs, mindfulness programs that are being used in schools?
I'm sure I don't know all of them. I've heard of Heartfulness. I've heard of Healthy Schools. And perhaps the most controversial possibly is Mind Up. Mind Up program. That one is marketed by the actress Goldie Hawn.
Mm-hmm.
Heartfulness, I've seen their video clip. They had, I think it was a marketing clip, where the teacher was interacting with the students, and she'd have them sit in Hindu-like postures and wish kindness onto the students that were absent for whatever reason. And they even crossed the line and had them wish kindness onto a deceased student, as if they were contacting, like,
oh,
almost like a prayer, wishing kindness and healthiness even onto a deceased classmate.
Trying to connect with the dead.
Yeah, it goes that far.
Oh, my goodness.
When you get into religious-level meditative practices, that line is easy to cross, and that they had it right on their own video.
Yeah, yeah.
Mind Up program, now, that one, Goldie Hawn, she started out in transcendental meditation, and then she switched more over to mindfulness and Buddhism, and she's quoted, she talks about how His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, His Holiness gave her mantra, and how they had to take the language of meditation and Buddhism out of it because people would get upset about that and they wouldn't be able to get it through the public schools. I mean, she talks about the stealth Buddhism aspects of it, but she's convinced that it's going to make the students live their best lives. And she has good intentions. She has very good intentions. Mm-hmm. It's just that she thinks that this is the pathway to get there. She's sold on Buddhism, and that's how she wants to take it. So.
Yeah.
She has another quote that says, "I'm a producer, and I'm going to get this show on the road."
Hmm.
You know,
has her actress side coming out there, and I'm sure that there are other well-meaning people who don't believe in traditional Christian values who are promoting this cross religion, but it's very, very scary. So what are some of the risks? I mean, you mentioned some of them, but how have students been negatively impacted by this mindfulness, the programming, the curriculum is it actually a curriculum or just the actions that they go through to get through the different levels of a trance state?
Well, like you said, it's well-meaning people that I haven't seen anybody involved that seemed that they were just callous or just in it for the money. Not really. I mean, there are people making money, but it's well-meaning people. They just are deceived by it, or they're not very discerning, and they have the best interest of the students in mind, I have to think. Certainly the teachers do that are being introduced to this, but such a complicated topic, it's deceptive.
Yeah.
The students, as far as being harmed and whether it's part of the curriculum, I know that it's being integrated into the health classes, usually.
Oh, okay.
I think their format is, some of them, is to have it throughout the day, like, for example, ringing these chimes or using the Tibetan bowl or whatever musical instrument sound they use. They'll ring that like maybe four times during the day, and the child is supposed to be conditioned to turn their thoughts inward and become more mindful. So it's a conditioning program that's being integrated throughout the entire curriculum.
So I think of Pavlov's dog.
Exactly.
When he said ringing the bell.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes, operant conditioning. You're exactly right. And what they're conditioning is the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
They're conditioning themselves to get into a higher mind state, basically. It starts out just as being more focused on your thoughts, being more cognitive, but the end result is to get up into these altered mind states.
Yeah.
There are statistics that are out there, and there are people studying this, that are confirming that young people, they learn to practice these meditation techniques in school, they're more likely to adopt Buddhism as their personal religion.
Mm-hmm.
We know that that's happening, but as far as negative health benefits, I doubt if they've accumulated any of that yet. So it's really the religious aspects at this point that would have to be challenged by the parents if they're going to take a legal action, I suppose.
Right.
Buddhism generally worships like an ambiguous higher power. So New Agers are okay with that, and various anti-Christians like that idea, and it makes it harder to define it as a religion and challenge it on religious grounds.
Yeah. Right, because they're trying to use the stealth language to get the whole religious aspect out of it so they can get it into schools without being challenged and also under the radar screen so parents don't know what's going on and don't know how to, you know, if they don't know what's going on, they can't respond to it. So where can parents go to get some research on this, to do some research on this?
They can research on their own. It's on the internet, but you have to be careful because it's muddy water. I mean, intentionally in some cases. The term mindfulness has been redefined, as we talked about.
Yeah.
And I've heard speculation about redefining the word religion, but the alarming terms like mystical psychosis, for example, you're not going to hear that term in the public schools. Or ascension sickness, that's more of a New Age term. They're talking about the negative side effects there. And that type of language is taken out. So doing your own research can be difficult. You can go on Dogpile, you know, a search engine or Wikipedia and find those terms, but you have to know what you're looking for.
Right. So Wikipedia at this point still has it up there, the definition to that.
Mystical psychosis is in there, and I think you'd find afferent signals like what yoga produces. It gets technical, but you can find some of this, but you have to look carefully. And remember, this is being applied to adults. I don't think there's terminology out there that talks about what's happened with the kids.
Yeah. And that's one thing we have to remember, that the kids have not been, there have been no studies done on the way this is impacting kids. And that's, unfortunately, too many times we see kids being used as guinea pigs.
Yes.
Especially in the public school system with things like this and other things also. But yeah, studies are done on adults, but not on children. And that's, you know, that's totally denies the fact that it probably has a greater negative impact on kids than it does on adults, because they're much more susceptible to things like this, much more susceptible to being manipulated because they're so vulnerable. And they have not, in most cases, have not, especially younger kids, have not fully established their worldview. So I can see where you mentioned that many studies are showing that these kids who are involved in the mindfulness programs have turned to Buddhism because that's what's impacting them at a young age. It's scary stuff for sure.
Well, if you think about losing what happens to the parents? I mean, being uninformed and not, the students are not offered the option of opting out at this point. I don't think in a lot of cases the teachers they don't understand all these things. I think of the Kropinski case. It's back in 1986. A fellow named, a 36-year-old man in Philadelphia, was experiencing harmful side effects, long-term side effects here, as he was involved in transcendental meditation. Right away, the lawyers for the defense, when he raised the lawsuit, the lawyer said, well, what about that head injury you had 4 years ago? Mm. And started blaming that. So if you look at it in the context of public schools, they're saying that mindfulness has no negative side effects, basically. So anything negative that comes up, guess who's going to get blamed for it? Probably the parents.
Poor
parenting.
Right.
Your child has misbehaved. They're having dissociations and mood problems because your parenting is faulty. It's not going to be blamed on the mindfulness programs because those supposedly have no negative side effects.
Right. It's all good stuff, they're saying. And that's very scary for parents, especially with the way things are with like children and youth, where the departments where they're pulling kids away, taking kids out of homes because of something the parents are accused of doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's very scary. I hadn't even thought about that.
Imagine that. Yeah, if you were already under pressure by children and youth, and along comes this mindfulness program, and finally your child is able to sit still in class and behave differently and showing improvement, and then longitudinally, after a couple of years of this, starts having the negative side effects, then what are they going to say? Well, we did as much we could in the public schools with mindfulness. It must be your bad parenting that is bringing them off track. They're going to wind up back in a counselor's office or on medication, or I guess you could even say taken out of the home.
Yeah,
possible.
Put in foster care. Yeah, which makes the problem even worse. So you had mentioned in the information that you sent that there's a Dr. Willoughby Britton. He has videos, YouTube videos and such.
She's more into
I wasn't sure it was a boy or girl. Okay.
No, that's all right.
I wasn't getting into transgenderism here, so this is a woman. Okay, I got you.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. As far as the legal rights, there are some very good authorities you can go to. There's the legal rights is being studied primarily because of the work done in California by a Dr. Candy Gunther Brown, And she has books available on Amazon and YouTube videos. The title is Debating Yoga and Mindfulness in Public Schools. But it's not an easy read. You're talking a 400-and-some page book with all this legal documentation. It's very empirical.
Yeah.
And then as far as the negative side effects, the emotional effects, that author that you mentioned, she is Willoughby Britton. She has her own website. It's called cheetahhouse.org. So cheetah as the animal cheetah, two H's, H-O-U-S-E, .org. And she calls it a one-stop shopping center for these negative side effects. Now, okay. She's a meditator. As far as I know, she practices, I think, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. So she's not against meditation, and yet she's against what she calls bait and switch, where it makes it seem like you're getting all these great health benefits out of meditation, and you don't really know what you're getting. And then there's a lot of these negative ones that come up. She has a website that discusses how to identify and react. I'm told, I haven't used the website, but that's what her purpose is. So you could look her up.
Yeah, I know.
Go ahead. Well, unfortunately, I was going to say those things haven't been taken into effect, as far as I know, in the public schools, and not for children.
Yeah, and the information you sent me was from Lighthouse Trails publication. Goes into a lot of detail.
Now, Lighthouse Trails, they are more along the lines of the of warning people about the paranormal and religious hazards of things like mindfulness. In fact, they have these easy-to-read pamphlets. One is entitled Mindfulness. They have one entitled Yoga, about yoga specifically. And they talk about the cases that have had involvements in demonology and how it can lead to the occult. So that's a good resource for parents. It's easy to read and available, and they are more of a Christian orientation, where they don't think that any of this alpha mind state work is appropriate at all.
Right, and their website is lighthousetrails.com. Lighthousetrails.com is their website.
They have a research journal they publish, might be quarterly, I think, that covers some of the up-to-date topics, but those pamphlets are a great way to get introduced to the basics and the hazards.
Right. Yeah, it's an easy-to-read pamphlet. So your advice to parents is contact the schools and find out if there's any mindfulness techniques being taught. And you say go ahead.
Yeah, I'll stop short of calling it advice. I'm
recommendations.
I'm wanting to inform parents today, but who don't know that this issue exists. But specific situations, I really don't know. I know it as far as schools. Like I said, I'm a fan of the schools. I'd say either research the mindfulness meditation yourself, or sit down maybe with a pen and paper and write a letter to your school asking them to opt out your child from any kind of meditation practice or mindfulness practice. If you think the same as you would hopefully want to do with any practice you weren't sure of.
Right.
One of the reasons I'm a fan of our local schools is because years ago I did. That's how I handled things.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote those kind of letters opting out from certain like sex education classes, or from I wrote one about collecting biometric data on my kids, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
The schools were glad to have input from me as a parent. They worked with me. And in fact, you know, that information that I was pursuing about the sex education courses came from you, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they didn't have answers about whether or not, you know, about what the content was of the classes they wanted to teach my kids. So I just wrote a simple letter. Nothing fancy, just handwritten, and they took it seriously, and it worked.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's very good.
Yeah.
It's good that school district is actually responding to parents. I know not all parents live in school districts that are that responsive, so it's good that you're in one. And I would encourage parents definitely to do the research on this, and also contact their schools, write a letter specifically, as Brian's recommending, to have their child opted out of any meditation or mindfulness practices, as well as the sex ed stuff too, because it's terrible. I think in every school district across this not only the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, but across the nation, there are very few schools that have not been impacted by sexually suggestive so-called sex ed classes, graphic sex ed classes. So, Brian, thanks so much for this information. I know parents would really appreciate it, just knowing that there's something else in their child's school they need to check into to protect their child and to make sure that their child is safe throughout the school day. So really appreciate the time you've taken these last two programs to educate us on this, because I've learned a whole lot, because like I said, I knew nothing about this mindfulness the practices being taught in public schools. So I really, really appreciate it. And also, I would throw this out there too. Just because your child is not in public school, I would check in if your child is in charter school or private school or Christian school, check into it. Because as Brian mentioned, some Christian churches have embraced yoga and such as that. So if that concerns you, check into your school, no matter what type of school your child is attending. That's very important to be engaged with your child's education so that you know what's going on. So thanks again, Brian, for being with us. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. And please keep up the good work, Diane. I really enjoy your organization and what you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for being involved in the public schools and being willing to make known some of the you know, things that are going on there that parents don't know about. So I really, really appreciate it. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.